What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke. Jack, what's going on?
Nothing, just feeling old, man. Just feeling old from these goddamn basketball and working out and shit. Man, it's killing me right now. Killing me.
Man, let's welcome to the show, man, someone I grew up watching, big fan of, defying all the odds to be able to play 14 years in the NBA and really make it possible for people like Nate Robinson and IT and some of the smaller players to kind of find their lane in a big man's game, man. Welcome to the show, Muggsy Bogues.
What's up, fellas? Appreciate
How are
you, man.
How's life going? We know you got your new book, Muggsy, My Life from the Kid in the Projects to the Godfather of Small Ball. How's life going for you right now?
It's going well, man. I cannot complain, not one bit. You know, people won't listen to it anyway. But yeah, I'm doing well, man. Things are going great. This is my second memoir that I'm putting out. My very first one was in 1994. It was called The In the Land of Giants. And that was kind of, you know, when they came to me and when they presented to me and when I decided to do that book, it was mainly when my father had just passed away and my best friend, one of my best friends, Reggie Lewis, had passed away a week right afterwards. So, and it was kind of mainly talking about me making the NBA and that sort of stuff. But this one has a lot more substance. There's a lot more information in terms of, you know, some of the players that I had impacted in the league, guys like Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson. I got Stephen Curry doing my forwarding, the impact that I had on him growing up. It's a more of a passionate book as well. Relationships and me and my wife, you know, which is kind of unheard of. We got divorced and we was divorced for 10 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, we found ourselves back to one another and we remarried in 2015, which was unheard of. So it's about, you know, relationships. It's about giving back to the community as well as some of the impact that I had on some of the players that I played with.
I'm looking forward to reading that. Also, tell us about your doc that was released on NBA TV.
Oh, the Always Believe doc, that was special, man. I was really appreciate the NBA taking that time and going behind the scenes and giving some attention to, you know, my career. Of course, you know, being the smallest to ever do it and people not really believing, you know, a guy my size was capable of doing it. But, you know, and for me, you know, it was just a game. And I never looked at anything different. You know, people don't realize, you know, I was a starter most of my career. It wasn't, you know, I came off the bench when I landed a part of my career, especially when I got hurt. And but I had, you know, opportunity to put my stamp on this game and give some inspiration to a lot of guys who now playing the game who didn't believe that they possibly, you know, could play at that level. And I'm just grateful that we was able to break down those barriers. Not only just myself, the Michael Adams, the Spud Webbs, and Charlie Chris, as well as Monty Tell, those guys. So, you know, you got to give props to them.
Talk to us about your upbringing. We've had a few Baltimore guys on the show. The common theme is this, you know, it's tough out there. You know what I mean? Your brother was addicted to drugs. Pops served some time. What was your childhood and teenage years like in Baltimore?
Well, it was challenging. You know, it was challenging growing up in the city of Baltimore. You know, at the age of 5, I got shot. You know, being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, that's the type of environment that we grew up in. But for us, you know, as kids, you don't know any different. It's like normal. It's like normalcy in terms of trying to just adjust to the environment and to the atmosphere that you raised in. Playing, you know, trying to pursue that game as well as trying to grow up. You know, again, you know, you had to look over your shoulders quite a bit. But at the same time, you know, we had a dream that was floating around in my head. Myself, Reggie Williams. You know, Reggie Williams and I was like Mutt and Jeff. He and I grew up together in the inner city of Baltimore. And Ben, he and I was able to push one another, keep each other on the same path, motivate one another, and take that journey and understand that we had an opportunity to not only do something for ourselves, but do something for our families. And, you know, so we had to try to, you know, keep our nose clean, if you will, make sure that we understood how the importance of what the education was back then, because growing up, you know, that big terminology that was floating around was dumb jocks and having players that came before us. And, you know, the guys like the Skip Wise, the Ernie Grahams, Dwayne Woods, the Kevin Bush, those guys before us, having the opportunity to witness those guys play the game and taking it as far as they could, but not able to take it to the highest level, which was the NBA. It just gave us, you know, that inspiration that we can, you know, change the trajectory, not only for our families, but for our community as well, in terms of the brand of basketball we have playing in our community.
I want to backpedal real quick, because you kind of just slid over like it was nothing. You said you got shot at 5. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, yeah, you know, as I said, the neighborhood where we grew up, I mean, growing up in the inner city, you grew up a lot quicker than probably in some of the suburbs. And you're exposed to things that you didn't realize as a kid that you would be witnessing at that early age. And outside of our apartment building, a fight had broken out. And of course, me, inquisitive mind, wanted to see what was going on. I snuck out the house and one of the kids took a rock and broke one of the store owner's windows. And the store owner came out, went straight to his shed and grabbed his double barrel shotgun and just started shooting in the neighborhood. And fortunate enough for myself, the bullet went over my head, but then all the buckshots went through my arms and then my legs, which I still carry one in my arm to keep me of a reminder of where I've come from. And, you know, those are the things that, for me, I think I look at it twofold, because at that same time, early on, you know, I used to go try to pursue the game of basketball And a lot of kids used to make fun of me. You know, I was the butt of everybody's jokes because of my height. And the ball was so big and I didn't know how to control it. But after that incident, in terms of being shot and going through that dramatic experience, I think it changed my mindset. Because, you know, once again, when I went back on that basketball court and heard the kids, you know, hurling all the little small jokes that could possibly come out of their mouth, it didn't have the same impact that it once did. And probably I'm quite sure that the dramatic experience that I just alluded to, what I went through by being shot, you know, the least of my worries was their words. You know, I was just still frustrated that I didn't know how to play the game of basketball at the time and that I didn't have anything to combat them with in terms of being able to compete and shut them down in that regard.
When did you feel like you kind of got a grasp of the game and really start to fall in love with the game of basketball?
Well, at the age of 7, that's when I met my blessing, Mr. Leon Howard. I think me and Reggie, we both met him at the same time because we was at our recreation center. And while we was down there playing with this ball, here it is, I just met Reg that day. And this little young man come walking up and approach us. He's about 5'7". He was a former collegiate basketball player. He happened to be the director of our recreation center at the time. And he saw us playing with the ball, and he asked us, were we interested in learning the game of basketball? And little that we knew, we was meeting our blessing, the guy that had all the information that we needed to change our whole perspective of life. And what Mr. Howell did for us, not only did he drill us, sharpen up our skills, instill the knowledge in terms of the game of basketball, but he gave kids vision that we didn't think that existed growing up in that inner city. And by him taking that, you know, mentorship and that role in terms of caring for those individuals in the neighborhood, it changed so many kids' lives. And I'm so thankful that we had a guy of his caliber being able to change us and give us a means of what life could be, you know, moving forward.
Where'd the nickname Muggsy come from?
Come from playing the game of basketball at the age of 7 years old. I'm out there stealing the ball. And I'll tell you, before, at the beginning, guys didn't want to pick me because of my size and everything and so forth. And because, you know, they thought that they was getting a kid that couldn't compete with all the other kids. And one day, one of the kids couldn't play because they saw me down there playing on these milk crates. I, you know, because when I didn't get picked, I got a little creative. I just cut the bottom out of milk crates and I tied it on each end of the fence. And I gathered a couple little kids around who wasn't playing, and we had some of the great Milk Creek basketball that I could never imagine. And then from that, playing Milk Creek basketball, one of the kids on the basketball court, on the big goal, I should say, he had to leave. So one of the kids holler, hey, you little shrimp, you want to play? And of course, this was my moment, my opportunity, because I always felt like I had the skill set now because of what Mr. Howell had instilled in me. And then once I played against my first opponent, of course, he dribbled the ball. I stole it from him right away, laid it up. And then he tried to do it the second time. I stole it from him again, gave it to my teammate, and he scored. And the third time, he tried to get a little more aggressive because he was much bigger than myself. And of course, I gave him a fake one way and went around the other, stole it from him again and laid it up. And then, of course, this guy stopped hollering, man, hold on. This little kid out here mugging you, man, mugging you all over the place. And it was a show. We used to come on every Saturday called The Bowery Boys. And one of the characters, he was a small guy. His name was Muggsy. And they kind of tied my aggressiveness for playing basketball. And I've been Muggsy ever since I was 7 years old. You know, no one know my mama named me Tyrone Curtis Bogues.
Your high school career, yeah. Arguably one of the greatest high school teams of all time at Dunbar, had yourself, Reggie Williams, David Wingate, and the late, great Reggie Lewis, your junior and senior year, 59-0. Talk to us about that team and the relationships you developed and just how fun it was playing high school with all those guys that ended up being in the NBA along with yourself.
Oh, man, that was special time back then. I mean, here it is. It's well before these guys now. You do a lot of recruiting where they got these prep schools. They got these guys trying to build this dominant program. That's just crazy. Lived in the neighborhood. You know, the school was just right across the street from myself. And my mom, everybody went to Dunbar, everybody in my family. Same with Reg and Wingate and all those guys. And when we all got there, I mean, we knew that we had something special. because we competed against one another during the summer. You know, we lived in Lafayette Projects. Wingate and them lived up at Cecil Kirk. So we used to play them all the time and compete against them, you know, and I always get on them how we used to get the better of them all the time when we played against them. But when we had the opportunity to play with each other, I mean, that was really special. I mean, people don't understand that we had 11 guys. Actually, I should say 15 of those players all got Division I scholarships.
That's crazy.
All got Division I scholarships. And Reggie Lewis, the late Reggie Lewis, I should say, Reg was our sixth man. He didn't even start. Wow. He came off the bench. But, you know, it was a special time. But all credit to Coach Wade. You know, Coach Wade was the ultimate leader. You know, he was the one that understood who we were. He was empathetic. He knew what made us tick. He knew where we came from. He knew how much talent we have, so he made each and everybody accountable. But more important, and also he gave us vision. You know, we had clarity. We understood what the mission was at hand. But more importantly, gratitude. We was grateful. You know, we was really grateful to be with one another, but we also understood the importance of how to win and how to lose. And fortunate enough for us, we never experienced the losing side, you know, because he was a former professional football player who really was a disciplinarian, and he really stressed how to conduct yourself on and off the court.
That's important. Talk to us a little bit, because I don't think he is talked about enough, the late, great Reggie Lewis, who lost his life by playing for the Boston Celtics. You know, you touched on growing up with him and getting a chance to play with him. But what kind of person was he off the court?
Reg was unbelievable. Him and Reggie Williams, they were two mirrors. They was identical. Both were quiet, didn't talk much. They was assassins when they got on the floor. Their game was kind of similar to one another. The only thing with Reg was is that, you know, Reg was more of a slasher. And when he became the first all-star amongst all of us. And he took Boston to heights where nobody thought they would go after Larry Bird had retired. Reg became that guy. And who knew what would have happened if Lenny Bosby had been there with him? I mean, that's how special Reg was in terms of his ability to galvanize all the guys around him. I mean, Reg, I mean, he gave MJ troubles. That's how difficult Reg was. His length, it was hard for him in terms of, because he played both ends of the floor. People didn't understand that. Reg played both ends of the floor. He had the total package, mid-range. He could shoot the three ball. And you never sped him up in terms of wanting to play him at a certain speed. He played his speed every time that he stepped on the court.
Obviously, mental health is something that's kind of new to our community as Black folks and new to sports overall. But how hard was it for you when you heard the news that your brother had passed during the game?
Well, you know, people don't understand that he collapsed while we was playing in the playoffs. And while we was playing, you know, we just thought that he tripped over Johnny Newman's foot. And then we came to find out it was a little more severe than that. And even when we was growing up, we didn't have no indication that Reg had any type of heart problems. I mean, that was always kept within the family, I'm assuming. We found out, like everybody else, when the news came out, when he couldn't finish the series when we played against them in Boston. And then here it is. I just lost my father that week. And then a week, and we just lost to the New York Knicks in the playoffs. And come to find out, Reg had just passed away. And I was in Phoenix, Arizona when I got the news. And I had spoken to him probably a week before that because he was now, I don't say he was cleared, but he was feeling better, and he, you know, I didn't know he had the permission to work out to start his, you know, conditioning, but that's what he was doing. And it was devastating. You know, it was devastating. It was too young, 27 years old. I mean, even though we grew up with life expectancy, we didn't think it was past 20. But, you know, once we was able to overcome that and we was on to prosperous things and to have him at the pinnacle of his career, I mean, it was heartbreaking.
Condolences, man, for the loss of your father and your brother. Baltimore, and even extending to the DMV region, why has there been so much talent to come out of those areas, you think?
Well, it's a lot of kids who came from there that they look up to. And it's became, I don't want to say it's the mecca of the game of basketball, but it's a hub. It's definitely a hub And it's anytime you got kids now, these days, you know, as the tension that the NBA has been receiving, I mean, it's overwhelming. And they see guys like themselves out of their neighborhoods, out there on that dance floor. And that's something that they believe that they want as well. I mean, now we got this thing is where it's global, where we got so many kids that's dreaming, not just the people that's in the United States. So the game has broadened, the game has grew, and having those guys back home, and that's why I always tell them, God's is a dime a dozen. So, you know, we always got to conduct ourselves the best way on and off the court because we never know who's watching. Body language is key as well as your skill set. And we got to put ourselves and separate ourselves in order to get the attention that we desperately deserve. And these guys understand that. We got now programs that giving these guys a platform to be able to operate from. You got Durant, the Mellos, you know, of course, in other states with CP and all these other guys. But now we have those platforms where these guys can go to these organizations, these establishments, to work on their skill set. You know, we didn't have that growing up. We just had recreation centers. You know, we didn't have trainers, guys that trained us and skilled up. I had a recreation director who happened to knew the game of basketball who just gave us that information, you know, which is totally right. Different today. And that's the way the world is now, so.
You chose to go to Wake Forest. What other schools were recruiting you knowing that you was a 5'3 guard?
Oh, well, you know, I had quite a few schools to recruit, man. Virginia, had Seton Hall. It really came down to Wake Forest and Seton Hall. You got to keep in mind, we was the number one team in the country. So we had a slew of coaches coming in, trying to pursue us in terms of trying to get us to go to their university. But for me, you know, I always use, and people don't understand, our practice, a lot of the college coaches, they came to our practice more so than they came to our games. People don't understand that. They came to our practice more than they came to our games. And my motto was, whoever they came to watch, I want to make sure they talked about me going out. And practice was something that was even tougher than the games. People don't realize, we might have had the second best team in the country.
On the bench. Mm-hmm.
On the bench. I mean, that's how talented our guys were. I mean, people don't hear about them today, but back then these guys had talent and they were skillful and they understood the game. And, you know, we had that type of chemistry, that bond with one another where, you know, I had the understanding that if these coaches come in here, the Georgetown, the Carolinas, I want to make sure they talked about me, even though they didn't pursue me as hard as they did, especially Georgetown, which Coach Thomas said that he regret that he didn't pursue me as hard as he once did. You know, I didn't have any regrets because it was all up to me in terms of what I felt comfortable for me and what I felt was best for me and my family. And this was the very first time that me and Reggie Williams had to decide to go separate ways because keep in mind, we've been playing with each other since we've been 7 years old, from elementary school, junior high school. We didn't have middle school back then, and junior high school, and then to high school. You know, in the summertime, we played in our recreation summer league teams. We traveled all the time to Five Star. So he and I was connected with each other from 7 all the way up till we was 18 years old. And then, of course, the decision for me to go to Wake Forest was based on ACC was the toughest conference back then. My mom, you know, she couldn't afford to travel. My dad was in prison, so they could just turn on the TV every Saturday and watch their little fella play. So that came down to me in terms of the best decision. And Seton Hall, PJ Colissimo was a little disappointed that I decided to go up there with them because they was really coming at me really hard. They had the kid Andre McLeod and those guys. But I felt Wake academically as well as the basketball realms, I think that was the best spot for them.
What's some of your best memories? You overlapped. You talked about the ACC. You overlapped MJ, Len Bias, and the ACC. What was that like?
Oh, that was awesome. I mean, again, I felt that was the best conference at the time in terms of the competition. I mean, we was going to every night. I had to face a Mark Price one night, Kenny Smith the next night, a Spud Webbs and Nate McMillan another night, a Vince Hamilton the next night. And then you go down and face Johnny Dawkins, and you got Tommy Amick and Keith Gatlin. I mean, the ACC was loaded. Then that was only the point guards. the two guards. You got MJ, and then you all of a sudden you got Len Bias, and people don't realize Adrian Branch and those guys. I mean, we had Brad Daugherty. I mean, you keep go down the list. The ACC was tough, and that's one of the reasons why I felt that I wanted to play there, because for me, the recognition is the key. And I felt like I played on one of the best high school teams that people say that has ever been assembled. And I felt comfortable with my skill set and what I was capable of doing. I just wanted the opportunity, and I knew getting that national attention in the ACC will allow me to have that.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk, get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
1986, you was able to win the gold in the FIBA championships with David Robson, Steve Kerr, some other guys. How was that experience?
That was an unbelievable experience. You know, we was the last collegiate team to win that gold medal before they sent the dream team over there in 92 because David and them lost in 88 that year in the Olympics. It was unbelievable. I mean, back then, you know, you guys got to, well, I don't know, y'all was just a little too young. It was, you know, it was a terrorism going on back then. You know, they was outside of our hotel room with machine guns protecting us. And I remember me and Kenny, we was late one game in Spain. And because of our activities that we decided to do the night before, and we had to run to the gym. And we were starters back then. And when we ran to the gym, of course, Coach Lou Olsen was our coach at the time. And, you know, he decided we was playing this, I believe he was playing this Germany team. And they look, I mean, so out of shape. These guys look like they're about 40 years old. Here it is, we early in our early 19 and 18 years old. And these guys and look like they're in their 40s. And but they had us, and Kenny, like I said, Kenny and I were starters, but we was late to that game. So he told us to move on the bench. We sit on the end of the bench. By halftime, they had us by 25. And you know how in those type of settings, it's all about qualifications. And you can't be losing to certain teams. So, of course, he put us back in the game the second half. We come back. We are probably by about 9 or 10 or whatever it is, he took us right back out and put Jeremy Abkinum back in the game. I guess he was trying to make a point, but that was a great experience, man, playing against the USSR, the Russians, Sabonis, the true Sabonis back then, and playing against the Drazen Petrovics of the world, the late Drazen Petrovic. I mean, that was a great experience, man, because they was considered professional players during that time. We were just collegiate players, and being able to accomplish that goal, to win the gold medal, and stand on that podium to hold that cup, put the gold medal around your neck. It was a surreal
moment. Talk to us
a
little bit about how good first Sabonis was, because we got he got to the league at a later age, and they said he was incredible at a young age, and then we got to see how special Drazen Petrovic was. So talk to us about both those players at that time when you got a chance to play against them and how good they were.
Well, of course, Sabonis was like MJ over here in the States. I mean, he was that type of talent, as well as that, had that type of recognition. For a big guy to have that type of skill set, to be able to pass, to be able to shoot it, to be able to play with your back towards the basket, as well as face the basket, that was something that we haven't seen over here and even in the States. So he really, you know, drew a lot of attention in that regards, and being able to have that type of, you know, ability to now translate it into the NBA was unbelievable. And the Drazen Petrovic, I mean, people don't understand how great Petrovic was. I mean, I had the fortunate enough to be able to play him over there when he was playing with Yugoslavia. And I had the fortunate enough to shut him down. I mean, he was averaging about 37, 40 points before we played him, the night before we played the Russian team. And that was a very big game. Kenny Smith was supposed to have that assignment that night, but I went over to Kenny and told Kenny as we was going on the floor, let me start off on Drazen. And if he have, you know, he start to have his little way or something, then you can get on him. Of course, Kenny never had an opportunity to get back to him because Patrick, he only had around about 12 points that game, averaging averaging around 30 during that tournament. And that was allowed us to, you know, to prevail during that game. But those guys, man, him and another guy over there, Oscar Smith, you know, who's in the Hall of Fame. Oscar was another talented player during that time, during that era. You know, those three guys really stood out, Sabonis, Stretch, Petrovic, as well as Oscar Smith.
Oscar Smith, I remember hearing something about him. 12th overall pick in the 1987 draft to the Bullets. What was your draft process like and kind of the culmination of, you know, starting at 7 years old and everything kind of your dreams finally materializing to allow you to be drafted in the NBA?
Well, of course, that was very special, man. I mean, here it is. You wanted to do it just like everybody else, just like all of the big guys have done it. You know, none of us small guys was at that time didn't have that opportunity. My boy Spud didn't get that opportunity. Michael Adams and those guys, you know, they didn't ever experience that. And for me to be able to experience that and be able to go through that process and put myself in that situation, when we was coming up at the time, I was already projected to go late first, early second, as well as Scottie Pippen and myself. And then after that Chicago, Portsmouth and Chicago camps. Yeah. After those two camps, man, that's where the NBA, you know, the coaches as well as the GMs, they get opportunity to go see you as opposed to the scouts. And he and I was able to, you know, showcase our skills and raise our stock to where I became the 12th player. He became the 5th player chosen. So it was a surreal moment, man. The weight of the world was lifted off of my shoulders that night. Being able to go up, shake the commissioner, David Stern, hand and put your hat on was a, like I said, it was a surreal moment.
At that point, the journey had just really begun, but your rookie year, you got a chance to play with the late, great Moses Malone, rest in peace, and Bernard King, two bucket getters. What was that experience like?
Oh, man, it was heaven. Mo was my guy. I was Mo's rookie. He took me under his wing and just taught me all the do's and don'ts about this game and about the NBA, which I credit him for me allowing him to play 14 years and get paid for 17. Moses was something special, having the opportunity to play with him and throw that ball to him and run that floor with him was breathtaking. But not only that, but we became so close off the floor. I mean, when I remarried in 2015, of course, he was at the wedding. And that was devastating because things happened right afterwards, you know, not too many months afterwards. But anyway, playing with him, man, was special. He was my guy. He called me the Baltimore pimp, you know, because of where I came from, I'm Baltimore. And the type of, you know, I always come in with all type of color skins, pink skins, green skins, you know, in terms of shoes. And he used to call me the Baltimore pimp, but I miss him dearly. And BK, man, BK was a walking bucket, as you said. You know, he was coming off of that injury off his one leg, and he always say, "Mugs, as soon as I get across half court, I need to get it. Look for it." I said, "All right, B." But I always tell him, I said, "Well, B, you can't take no more than two dribbles, damn it. You know, I want my assists." So he always understood that. It was great playing with those guys, man. I'm Hall of Famers, and allowed me to be who I was. So I was grateful to be able to, you know, to have that time with him.
Two greats. But what do you feel like your personal welcome to the NBA moment?
My personal welcome to the NBA moment was when Buck Williams gave me 8 stitches. You know, I went down and we playing New Jersey. And here I am going down trying to get this little loose rebound and in the lane, so to say. And he let me know that this is not where God belongs. And I caught a big elbow right across my eye and I had 8 stitches from that moment. So that was my introduction to the NBA.
That's tough. You also got a chance to play with Manute Bol, and everybody was fascinated at the time that obviously he was the tallest player and you were the shortest player. What was it like playing with him?
It was my guy. I mean, me, him, and Mo, man, God almighty. We was like, everywhere you seen the two of them, you seen me, if you had to look down. But I tell you, man, that Nudie was funny. He was so funny, man, that, you know, you got to keep in mind that we didn't have private planes back then. We all flew commercial. You know, that's been back in 88. We, you know, teams didn't have those type of situations. So, and when we go fly, you know, it's only 8 first-class seats. So they went by seniority. So, of course, Newt and I got bumped in the back, and we in the back, and you can imagine his knees all up in his chest because the seats are so daggone small. And he back there trying to tell me how he killed lions with a spear. I'm like, what kind of lions you guys got over there? Lions with no teeth in the mouth? Talking about you killing lions with a spear. But he was funny, man. He was such a treat to be with. And I'm so happy and so proud of Bobo because he's such a slight image of his daddy. Even though the skill set is totally different. You know, Newt always, you know, I would give you just one story. Newt and I was playing one-on-one. And Moses was just geeking it up. He was geeking it. So Newt liked to shoot his little slingshot, like, by his ear. You know, I had a 44-inch vertical jump, so he went to go shoot it, and I blocked the shot. Boy, that pissed him off. And Mo was just all over. He chased me around that damn gym about 15 minutes. He couldn't catch me. And, you know, and then when he tried to catch me, you know, I was a wrestler. You know, I wrestled back in my day. So I kind of grabbed his little legs and put him up in the head. Threw him up a little bit, let him know, hey, boy, I can slam you any moment now, you know? You better be careful. So that was one of them, yeah. That was one of them things I had to, you know, wrestling was my thing before basketball.
So you blocked his shot and you almost dipped him. That's all bad for big fella.
1988, the NBA expansion draft. They had the two teams, Charlotte Hornets and Miami Heat.
Yeah, man, that was another opportunity where I got another whiff of that ugly head. The NBA shows itself because the season had just ended. We just lost to Detroit in the playoffs, and I had my exit meeting with Wes Unseld. You know, me and Wes, we sitting there, and Wes was telling me, you know, all the positive things and what we're going to try to get to next year. You know, we had a bunch of older guys on Washington. You know, Moses and Bernard King, those guys. You know, they was at the end of their careers. And I had Terry Catlett and I had the young John Williams at the time. So Wes had said, well, you know, Muzz, we're going to bring in a lot of up-tempo guys. You know, we want to play fast pace. We want to do this and that. And I felt excited. I thought that, you know, we all was on the same page. But as soon as I got home to my town home, I got a call from my agent, David Falk. And David asked me, you know, how did I feel about going to Charlotte? And I'm like, Charlotte, what is Charlotte? I didn't even realize the Spanish team was coming at the time. He said, well, there's a new team, Charlotte Hornets, about to come in, and it's a possibility that they're really interested in, and they want to take you. I said, well, I just left my exit meeting with Wes, and Wes was, you know, talking about who they, you know, they're going to bring in some guys that more or less up-tempo style of play. He said, well, they just told me that they wasn't going to protect you, and you're going to go to Charlotte. And so I'm like, ain't this a... MF, this is some bull crap, man. These guys just sit there and told me, yeah. And that's when I learned the nigger head, that ugly head of the business. And but it was a match made in heaven for me, you know, coming to Charlotte, even playing here for 4 years in the Carolinas. So the people was aware of who I was. And, you know, playing with guys like Dale Curry and Rex Chapman that early on, Kirk Rambis and Kelly Trepuka, you know, I was just hungry. You know, I felt, well, this is an opportunity for me to go down here and make something of my career and try to make the best of it, regardless of this situation. You know, look at it positively and try to, you know, get what you want out of it and see, you know, if it worked out in your favor, which it actually did.
What was the energy like with an expansion team? Obviously, it being new, they knew you from Wake Forest, so it made sense. But what was the energy? How big were the crowds? You know, obviously, expansion is new. So your first season, what was it like with all those things?
Man, this crowd was unreal. Do they realize Charlotte was, I was surprised because I knew they knew college basketball. I didn't think they didn't know anything about the professional sports. But we had the very first night, we had 24,000 in attendance. The men had tuxedos on and the women had their gowns. So it was a formal affair for them. And, of course, we lost to Cleveland by 40 points that night. But believe it or not, as we walked off the floor, they stood up and gave us a standing ovation. We knew we was in a special place. And we just couldn't wait to, you know, to get the season going to try to win as many games as we possibly can. You know, that very first year, we only won 20 games. Then come back the year after that, we won 19 games. And then from that moment on, we start climbing the ladder with 31, 44, 55, and 55, and so forth. So, but we start getting good draft picks. But it had to do, you know, with the great selection of bringing in the Lonzo Mornings, the Larry Johnson, the Kendall Gills, and other worlds for us to get over that hump. But at the beginning, the town supported us. We broke attendance records for 9 straight years.
That was the Coliseum, right?
It was the Coliseum that was over at Tavola, on Tavola Road, as opposed to the one that's uptown.
Yeah, because my first year I played there. I played 1 year there, my first year. In 2001, I played in the Coliseum.
Okay, yeah, yeah, because 2002, that's when they left.
Yep.
Yep, they left in 2002. Actually, so your first year in the league was, I thought you came in like 98, 97.
I got drafted in 97, but I bounced around overseas and came back in 2001.
Talk to us a little bit, you touched on them, but what it meant to add people to the roster like Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning. As you said, you guys continued to get better as a franchise and started making your playoff appearances, but how talented were those young guys and how much did they help you and your team?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I tell you, that was the beginning. I mean, our first major draft pick was J.R. Reed. I mean, well, Rex Chapman was the first, but then we got J.R. Reed. We started climbing. Then when we got Larry, well, we got Kendall Gill, and then when we got LJ, you know, that was the beginning. That was the beginning because we came off a 31 winning season that year. And then when LJ came, you know, we was able to elevate all the way up to 44 wins his first year. And then the next year, we acquired Alonzo. And then, you know, the history from there was, I mean, that's from there on, that's where we start to really elevate our franchise. Even though Zo was with us for just 3 years, but within those 3 years, and LJ, fifth year, I mean, we put ourselves on a national level. I mean, we was one of the young, hot, up-and-coming teams at the time, along with Miami and Orlando, because Shaq and Penny was over there. We was right there amongst all of them. You know, and during that time, these guys, especially Larry, you know, his rookie year, I recall telling him, you know, right at the midpoint, did you want to win the rookie of the year? Because at the time, Mutombo had a little slight edge of him. And he, of course, like, come on, little fellow, you damn right I want to win the Rookie of the Year. So I told him, okay, well, we're going to get you that Rookie of the Year. And I specifically kind of focused on L a lot during that time. But it was easy because, shit, he created the opportunities. I mean, we running, mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of have the means of looking one way and making a guy follow that direction. And, you know, you get the ball the other direction. So having him win that award was special because that's the bond that he and I always had developed with the relationship with one another, the trust with him, Alonzo, Dell, Rex, all the guys. I mean, the bonds that we build with one another is second to none.
Take us back a little bit. The East in the late 80s, early 90s was, you could punch people, you could take them out of the air, you could do all that and not get kicked out of the game. Fast forward, by the time me and Jack played, if you push someone, you get suspended for 2 games. What was the physicality like back then with the Bad Boy Pistons, Riley's Knicks, MJ's Bulls were on the rise? What were those battles like for you personally?
Well, it was great for me. I mean, I didn't have any problems with it. Probably people think because you're small that you had some kind of issue with it. Nah, I mean, that was the era that we played in. That's how I grew up, you know. And that's where, I mean, we had big guys camping in the lane. You know, we had that 3 seconds or you had to dip in and dip out. No, there's big asses were just standing there where you couldn't go down there and sort of, you know, just do what you want. You had no free lane. But that's the game, man. That's what the game was. You can hand check you, you know, can kind of guide you where you wanted you to go. You can come across the lane.
Forearm, get hit. Shivers.
And that's me. And, you know, you get hit in forms of just, you know, delaying your player, which that wasn't a foul. And you can curl guys. You can hug. I mean, you could do a lot more physical. You can be a lot more physical with the guys. But that's why people kind of talk about the game in that regards because, I mean, it was real. I mean, you just couldn't get to your place that you wanted to go just as easily as you wanted to. You know, and that's one of the reasons why they created some of these rules and trying to make the game faster for the fans and more, you know, entertaining and that sort of stuff where the lane is wide open. You don't have nobody camping in the lane. You can't hand check. You can't touch. You can't impede one progress. So it's all those type of things that come into play today to where guys of our era always feel like, you know, they can play in this era. And I always say any NBA player feel like they play in any era. You know, that's just the confidence right. within themselves. You know, that's why they became yeah. NBA players.
Yeah, but in all actuality, they can't, because there's some soft motherfuckers out there. You know just as well as I know, a lot of them motherfuckers would not be nowhere around.
Well, you're right. Looking at this era right here, I can tell you, there's a lot of guys won't be able to play in our era. I mean, because we're looking at skill sets in terms of how they want to justify the games. You know, we had 7-footers playing with their back towards the basket. Mm-hmm. You know, we got 7-footers now bring the ball up mm-hmm. the court. So the game was totally different in that regards. And looking at these guys, how they dribble, man, I feel like I would have had a field day in terms of being able to steal the basketball. I mean, just looking at it in terms of, you know, with the way they teach the game now and, you know, I can get into a lot of stuff with the fundamental, with the two balls and all that type of stuff, but I don't want to go there. You know, the people, how they feel like they need to sharpen their skills, I'll let them go and do that right.
Right.
You got a chance to play against CMJ in college. You guys are in the league at the same time. You start to see him build his legend. Any great memorable matchups or stories against MJ you could share?
Well, you know, MJ, he always liked to fuck with me. That's just who we are with one another when we come in contact. I mean, even off the court to this day, you know, walking around, he'll put his hand up high, trying to, you know, for me to give him a high five. And I'll put my hand down low, like, then you come down and give me a low five. So it's just the way we compete against one another. But M, man, you know, he always tell you, you know, especially when we're playing the game, you know, it was some stuff that's going on in the internet where they say that he called me a midget, which is not true. And they felt like he had some kind of impact, which is not true. He always called me short, little fella. Yeah, you know, he's little ass. He always called me little ass and that sort of stuff. So we playing against them. Of course, he got the ball. He just came back from retirement. He got the ball up in the air, and I'm playing him on the baseline one-on-one. And of course, everybody on my team know that I don't like help. Don't come and help me. You know, I don't care where you are. Where the guys, don't come help me. Try to back me down, because guys ain't used to playing their back to the bats anyway. But anyway, this particular moment, and I guess it became infamous because it's a card that's out where he's holding the ball up, and I'm looking right at him. And I'm talking shit to him. I'm telling him, come on, what you going to do? And then all of a sudden, he started to try to back me in. And then all of a sudden, he tried to turn around and shoot his little jumper. I smacked it down, but they call illegal defense on somebody because they was on across the line. But I always fucking with that time. Look, you know that was a steal, don't you? Yeah, hey, we play with each other that back and forth. That's what I do. You know, I'm that ball defender, I'm going to make you think about that when you got that ball in your hand.
Yes, sir.
You make your first playoff appearance in 1993. You beat Boston in the first round and lose to the Knicks in the second round. What's the memories of those of your playoff experience, your first playoff experience?
Well, for one, that was a great stepping stone for the franchise. That was the first year that we made the playoffs. That was Alonzo's very first year. And for him to be able to close it out, hitting that shot and being able to, you know, prevail against that Boston series was a great moment for the city, for the organization, and for each of us individually, you know, because that was the beginning of our careers in terms of post-play, in terms of being able to, you know, play after the regular season. So that was a big stepping stone for us, and we really felt like we was on our way after that moment.
In the following years, you make two more playoff appearances, but don't make it out the first round. Knee injuries in your time in Charlotte. How was that feeling knowing that the injuries stopped you from continuing to be great in Charlotte?
Well, I didn't think it was going to come to an end because I was promised that I was going to retire as a Hornet. Me and Dell, in terms of what our involvement was with the organization. But people don't understand, man. During that time, I have given so much, not only to the organization, but for the city, and sacrificed a lot. Restructured my contract and so forth and all that. From 90 to 94, I mean, you go back, look, you know, I was top 3 in assists, you know, averaged a double-double one of them year, was close to having a double-double throughout the years, but I was one point short of it several times. But I was had one, and when I had my knee issue, people don't realize I was playing on one knee. You know, here it is, they question about your 5'3 and this and that, but I was out there playing on one knee, still was able to be productive and run my team and so forth. And I was begged to come back because I missed the entire season the year before due to my bone bruise. And when I discovered acupuncture, you know, I was able to now to get strength back in my quads and pull that pressure off of my knee. And then they was talking about, well, Muggsy, we need you. Would you wind up playing on one knee? I know, understand. You don't have to play in the back-to-back games and this and that. So I accommodated them in doing so. And we won 56 games that year, all right? We lost to New York in the playoffs. And now it's time to give me my extension. And here it is. They bring in a new GM. So all of a sudden, I ain't gonna mention names. I don't even wanna mention names because I don't wanna go there. They bring in new GMs and all this and that. Of course, you know, Coach Joe Shinabe and them had promised me that I would be retired there. So they bring in a new GM. They decided to not give me my extension. And they created all this chaos and come back the next year. They weren't even gonna let me practice. You know, so I had to file grievance. They weren't even gonna let me practice, not even because they made a trade, they brought someone in, I ain't gonna say no names, and they didn't want me to compete against them after we just finished playing against them, beating them all sorts of, you know, having all sorts of success.
Hey, come on, Muggs, we need a name, Muggs. Who'd they bring in, Muggs? Quit playing with it, bro. We need a name.
Yeah, come on, man. This is all a smoke. You gotta say his name. Fuck that.
I knew it was coming. That's why I set it up that way. That's why I set it up. Well, here it is. They brought in okay. David Wesley. All right, so they had Dave Collins down there.
I knew it.
They had Dave Collins down there, and they had Paul Silas was assistant coach. So here it is, come back to practice that following year. They tried to lock me out. And they locked me out. They locked me out of practice. And
what year is this? Is this 95? 97.
This is 97. Okay. This is 97. This is the year I got traded. This is 97 when Jack was asking me that my year was coming to an end. So right after we lose in the playoff to New York and all this and that and come back, and I think I probably had one of the best series throughout everybody, but that's here and there. So they bring him in. They didn't want me to practice. They try to hold me up. So I'm like, well, damn, I mean, you brought somebody in. Why I can't compete against them? I mean, this is who y'all want to run your program, so forth. So they didn't let me they didn't let me practice. So I had to file for a grievance, and then they let me come to practice. Now while I'm in practice, so they leaving me off for all the teams: the first team, the second team, even the third team. So I can't even get on the floor to practice with any of the guys. And Paul Silas, who at the time, Paul Silas was the assistant coach. And I'm like, Paul, this is some bullshit, man. I mean, really? This is how y'all going to treat me? This is y'all treat me now in terms of all of this? After I just came off of one leg playing with you guys, you begged me to come back and play, and y'all going to treat me like this? Everybody in the organization knew that it was wrong, what they was doing. But anyway, it came to during the regular season when they came to me and asked me, well, Muggs, we got to trade. Well, before that happened, we played against New York, a preseason game in our arena, which in our arena, everybody used to see me as a starter playing all these minutes and so forth. Here it is, I'm on the bench. I didn't get in, 1 minute of the game. Here it is, we down by 25 to New York. And the crowd was going crazy. We want Muggsy, we want Muggsy. So that just got under Dave Collins' skin. And he felt like he didn't want to go on the rest of the season under those conditions. So they made a trade for me and Golden State with B.J. Armstrong. Of course, I could have blocked the trade. And I asked Tony Delp, you know, how was he comfortable? Did you want to move on? Because they was treating him wrong. And T.D. said, Muggs, I'll go with it, man. It don't matter to me. They ain't playing me anyway.
The business, as you say. I want to rewind real quick. 96, yeah. You guys draft Kobe Bryant. And obviously, We all know he's traded to the Lakers for Vlade. What was that experience like? Obviously, no one really knew he was going to turn into the player he was, but what could have been? You know, you got would have had a year with him at least. What was that like during that time?
Yeah, yeah. It would have been special, but we understood Kobe didn't want to come to Charlotte. He wanted to play in the bigger market. And once we came to find out that the Hornets were just taking him based on the request of the Lakers, then, of course, you know, because he was a high school player getting a lot of hype. And, you know, at the time, we wasn't really following him much, but we was hearing so much about him. And I personally started to watch a little bit highlights of him and was getting a little excited, like, ooh, this is a possibility. This, you know, young fella could come here and do something special. But then we found out that, you know, it was a means of him wanting to play in that bigger market. And so we just realized that who was going to be the next available player that we was going to be able to acquire.
You shared the court with Dell, and obviously it's well documented, the kind of big brother, if you want to call it, or second dad you were to Steph and Seth. You know, not knowing who obviously Steph was going to turn into years later. What do you recall most about seeing them run around all over the locker room and in the gym?
Yeah, I mean, it was special. I mean, our kids and his kids are very close, and just having the kids in the locker room, man, that's what it was all about family. You know, having them around, being able to be part of the things that we was doing. They enjoyed playing basketball. And you know, Dell and I played 11 years together. You know, out of my 14 years, we played 9 here in Charlotte and 2 in Toronto. And having the opportunity to, you know, be with Steph and Seth and play with them and have an opportunity to have an input on their maturation in terms of the game of basketball, I mean, it's priceless for me. It's just self-rewarding. Saying they was able to carry the game to the highest level, which is the NBA, and then seeing Steph now, shit, become known as one of the greatest shooters ever to lace up in the NBA. That's mind-boggling. That's mind-boggling for me, you know, giving them a little airplane ride, and he's 40 right. years old, and all of a sudden now he up there shooting the lights out, man. It's surreal, but I'm so happy and blessed for those guys, for his family, because they deserve it, you know, because they worked extremely hard. You know, Steph, as a kid, he wished he... You know, he was just dreaming to get the 5-3 because he felt like, if I get the 5-3, I can play in the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was special, man, seeing them guys being able to fulfill their dreams.
You mentioned the trade to Golden State. You spent some time in Toronto with a young Vince Carter, who out the gate was a monster, but also T-Mac. Talk to us about both those guys, and did you see, again, Vince was hit the scene going crazy, but did you see T-Mac had what he had in him to become the star he became?
Absolutely. I mean, I looked at those two guys like I looked at LJ and Zoe when they first came in the league. You know, they was hungry, so much talent. And I always remember what Mo had always told me in terms of being able to have that longevity career, understand the importance of how to conduct yourself on and off the court. And I personally took those guys under my wing because I wanted to make sure that they had that opportunity to be the best version of themselves, because this league could be so crucial, especially the people that's out there coming after you. And when I got the opportunity to play with Vince and T-Mac, I mean, my eyes lit up because they was a little totally different from LJ and Zoe. These was guards, to where they had this ability to create and to be able to, you know, in the highlight realms that they had was amazing. And just listening, having their ear, being able to have their ear, because they was hungry. They was willing to listen, and just telling them and teaching them and, you know, how to do's and don'ts, to go about yourself and go about to be professionals. I mean, and seeing how they were able to put their career together, it's priceless, man. It is priceless. That's what it's all about.
I know sometimes, I mean, we get used to seeing such amazing stuff all the time that it doesn't really awe us anymore. But with those two in particular, when you, like I said, when you saw them play and some of the stuff they were doing, did you ever catch yourself in a moment like, oh, shit, I got to snap out of this because I'm still playing or anything like that? Because, I mean, you know, Vince was making every highlight reel you can imagine. T-Mac, when he got his opportunities, he was doing his thing. Were there any times where they just kind of caught you in awe situations?
Oh, yeah, in practice every time. I mean, in practice, they'd be doing some unreal stuff. But then in the game, I mean, I gave Vince a pass. I didn't think he was going to catch it. We was playing the Charlotte Hornets, believe it or not. I threw it, and I thought I threw it too high. I'm like, damn, I threw this little too high. It is exactly right. No such thing. This kid caught it, and not only did he catch it, he was able to carry it to the basket. And I was like, stop and say, like, get the fuck, you know. My man. You know, I was just like, my man. Yeah. That was some, I'm telling you, man. And I mean, it was effortless, too. I mean, his little routine warm-up, just go up and just touch the top of the box on the backboard, you know. And it just feel, it's not like a running jump, just a little one-up jump. And I'm looking at, man, where does kids get bounced right like that? You know, this thing is natural bounce, but the skill set was something that I was kind of impressed with. You know, the jumping ability was one thing, but the skill set, and I didn't realize that Vince could shoot the ball as well as he did, as well as T-Mac. I didn't realize those guys could shoot the ball as well as they did.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
You step away from the game in 2001. Shortest player ever, top 25 in career and assists, played 14 years and had a hell of a resume, bro. Do you have any regrets?
No regrets. You know, I was 16 on the list before I left when I first retired.
Yeah.
And the reason I retired was mainly because of my mom. You know, my mom was battling cancer at the time. I had 3 years left on my contract. I would have played 17 years. I got paid for 17, but I only played for 14. I'm thankful for Mark Cuban for allowing me to come off the books and not allow them to go over the luxury tax, and he just paid me all the way through to 2004, so I truly appreciate that. But Moms was going through her challenges, and for me, she meant everything. She meant everything for me. And I just didn't want to go out there and play no more. You know, once she no longer was part of this, I didn't want to be part of it no more. So I felt like I did enough. I did well enough for my money. You know, I wasn't in no situation, so I just couldn't. I felt like she saw my last game and there wasn't no need to me go play no more.
Condolences. I lost my mom to cancer too, and that's how Jack and I came so close. My mom was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer November 21st, 2007, and died the 27th. So 26 days. So I know what kind of monster cancer can be. So again, condolences, man. That shit is never easy.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's been 21 years, and it felt like it still felt like yesterday.
Same thing. That's how crazy it is. 14 years for mine, but it seems like it just happened. Yeah. Without basketball in your life these days, how do you satisfy your competitive drive? I know it's still in you. It'll never leave us. What do you do to kind of get that out?
Well, because I got my kids. My kids keep me on my toes. I got grandbabies. They keep me on my toes. My foundation. I got a nonprofit foundation where we provide scholarship for trade-bound students. A lot of folks focus on the four-year university students. You know, I really want to kind of give a platform to those kids who have ambitions of going to trade skill schools, because I believe they can come right out and be productive and get a job right away and be skillful in those positions. And we also, we feed the community. You know, we got a labor of love program where we go out and feed the community on Thanksgiving, Christmas, Labor Day. So all the holidays, we go to the community and we feed the community. 1,000 families per time at a time to where they can come out and not have to make a sacrifice, whether you got gas in your car as opposed to food on your table. So, you know, lending my times in that regards and, you know, serving as an ambassador for the NBA as well as the Charlotte Hornets. And, you know, a lot of speaking engagements in those regards. So keeps me busy.
You do anything athletically still? You still play pickup? You golf? You do anything like that?
I'm golfing all the time. I ain't doing no more running up and down the court. No more running up and down the court for me.
You heard Jack talking. That's when he first got on. Jack has had a newfound, let me get back and start playing, and his body feels like it's going to crash every time he's done.
I don't know what Jack, you need to stop that, man. I tell you. You don't need to put that notion in your head, because you know those little toe injuries take a long time to heal. You can get it caught in your bed sheet, and you can be hurt.
Hey.
So those are the top. That's what we're dealing with now.
Thank God for the tree, man.
They talking about getting
thank
back
God
out
for cannabis. If it wasn't for cannabis, I'd be in the hospital right now.
Hey, take us back to 1996. You were part of, to me, one of the greatest basketball movies of all time, Space Jam. How did that opportunity come about?
Well, my agent was David Falk, and Michael, Patrick, we all had the same agent. And David Falk, Warner Brothers, I guess they called them, and they was interested in some guys that pursued this movie, which you just alluded to, Space Jam. And at the time, I just had surgery. You know, I had surgery on my knee, and I couldn't even walk. You know, I was on crutches and so forth. And they had Tim Hardaway come out there and read my lines. And they told me, well, you know, Muggsy, just come on out anyway. You know, we'll just try to find a way to make it work. If not, then we're going to just go another route. So I just decided to go out there and read my lines. And they kind of created an opportunity where instead of me walking, they was pulling me on a trolley. So I act like I was kind of walking when I'm moving my shoulders on one of the scenes. But, you know, it worked out. It worked out. They used me. You know, and we had we had so much fun on that set. We was there for about 3 weeks. That was the same time when they created the basketball gym for MJ, which I couldn't play because I had surgery on my knee, but there were some great pickup games over there. But on set, I remember one morning we were supposed to have a shoot, and LJ decided to get, he wanted to get a little trim, a little haircut before the shoot. And he let this white dude cut his hair who never cut a black guy hair before. So long story short, he gave him a fucked up cut. So we had to cancel the shoot that morning, and they had to have somebody from LA come in to kind of tighten him up to where he felt comfortable going back on cameras. But man, there were some good days back there. A lot of card playing, a lot of card playing.
Absolutely. If there were going to be a biopic of your life, who would play you?
Oh, shit. Who going to play? Damn. I mean, ain't too many 5'3" guys out there that kind of, I mean, God, who would? I'm trying to think of an actor. Man, I can't think of anybody out there.
He may not have to be 5'3".
I mean, well, yeah, Kevin Hart too damn black, you know? Kev too dark, right?
Hey, Kev could probably play, you know, Kev got, I did Think Like a Man with Kev, and I just thought he was a funny guy that he could hoop a little bit. He was out there kind of showing his shit. Kev might be a good one. We just have to put some makeup on him, lighten him up a little bit.
Yeah, he played in the celebrity game with us up in New Orleans, you know, for the NBA, you know, when I played in that celebrity game. But yeah, but I don't know, man. That's a hard one to kind of spell out. I'm trying to think of, shit, man, you got me on that. I'm lost.
We'll come back to it. LaMelo Ball, how has he taken the city of Charlotte in that organization by storm?
Melo fit in perfect. I mean, he's a great kid. He understands where he is. I think he know, meaning by, it's a small market. You know, it's not L.A. or New York. He embraced the town. This town has open arms with him, embraced him, all sorts of hospitality. I just think he really gets it. You know, be so young, he really gets it. I mean, he really electrified the crowd. I mean, he's a guy, a kid that bringing his teammates and getting them galvanized and believing in them, and the city is following right behind him. So I really think that the future is bright. I really believe that bringing in IT was a big push for him, and I told Mitch Kupchak that. But people don't underestimate what IT can mean for a guy like Melo, not just on the basketball court, but off the court as well, in terms of the way this kid was and how he conducted. I mean, they didn't realize he was an all-star, you know? So, and they ain't have nobody else on that bench who can give him that type of information, especially at that point guard position. And not only that, he can play alongside them too. So I was really happy and grateful that he got his opportunity here in Charlotte, even though he'd been, you know, getting opportunities in Dallas and Denver and so forth. But I told him this is a place that he can kind of rejuvenate Absolutely. His career, especially if this organization look at him the way that I'm looking at him and how he can impact, you know, the young fellas on that team.
I think you touched on something that Jack and I talk about all the time, is the league is so young now, there's no veteran leadership. And how important that really is. Like you said, obviously he could still give you something on the court, but off the court could possibly be even be more valuable at this point, you know, helping guide young players like LaMelo and some of the other guys on the roster. But it's something we talk about all the time. I mean, when we came in the league, there was always vets, 37, 38, 39-year-old guys that can kind of, you know, are OGs. Now it's the young leading the young. So I think that's a great situation for IT, obviously a friend of our show. Friend of the program, but happy to see he landed on his feet there. But I love what you touched on, because I think it's so undervalued these days that they don't, you know, as soon as you get past 33, 32, 33, 34, that window is shutting, and how important veterans are to help, especially young teams.
Oh yeah, you know shit. As soon as you hit 30, they looking at you old. You know, I remember going, like I said, and they talking, and when you talk about renegotiation, they really bring that up. So, I'm just so happy for IT, man. He's a great kid. He's a great kid, man, that deserves this opportunity, you know, with all he went through and he had to endure, to be back in this position because he got a lot to give. And I'm just happy that he's here, being able to give it to this organization, which I got a great fond memory of.
Outside of guys on your the Hornets, are there any players you enjoy watching today?
Oh, of course, Steph. You know, love watching Steph, CP, you know, not just because he went to Wake Forest, but, you know, because he's still that general.
Definitely
that guy that really elevates his teammates, and people don't understand the importance of his brilliancy in terms of running a team. You know, running a team is something that is being so underappreciated that people don't really look at that. That's the beginning start of how you being able to be really successful amongst that team. So I'm happy for that. And I just love the game. You know, I love watching the game. KD, Kyrie Irving, all the greats that's out there doing their thing from the Ja Morant. And I know that's another special kid right there. You know, Ja is really putting his lead on notice, and people don't understand that they're looking at the athleticism, but the IQ level. It's the IQ level for me in terms of his maturation on that floor, being able to get his teammates involved and at the same time being able to do his.
I'm going to put you on the spot right here. Who do you see? We're about a few weeks away from the playoffs. Who do you see in the finals? Who do you think is going to represent the East?
Well, it's hard to go. For me, people keep talking about, you know, the Heat. And for me, Milwaukee, you got to go through Milwaukee. You know, Milwaukee is the complete team for me in terms of what they have and what they was able to do. And you still got to beat the defending champs in order to become the champs. And the East right now, there's too many unnoticed for me. It's too many concerns. With Brooklyn, you never know what's going on with their situation with Kyrie and so forth, how many more games you're going to be able to participate in, you know. And with the Heat, you know, they just, for me, is something missing. It's just something missing. Even though they got some dogs over there, it's just something missing. Even though with the addition of Kyle Lowry, it still is something missing to where they not gelling like they, even though they got the best record. But it's something that they're not gelling the way I think they would have like they did in the past when they won it. So in the East is Milwaukee, and then in the West, it's Phoenix. You know, Golden State got too many inconsistency things going on. Phoenix has been steady, even though CP's been out, but he'll be back. So I got those two. And again, man, I think so too.
I agree with you. I mean, I like Golden State, but, you know, with Steph's injury and, like you said, too many unknowns, it's going to be hard to get that rhythm. But Phoenix has stayed consistent. They got a taste of it last year. Everyone thought it was luck that they got there. They took that shit to heart and had a chip on their shoulder all year, got better. Shout out Monty Williams and them boys. So I definitely think, you know, Phoenix, it's going to be a good year for Phoenix.
And you guys know it takes a lot to go right in order to win that chip. You know, it just takes a lot, you know, and everything just got to line up. A little luck got to happen for you as well. I mean, you just got to line up and with these other teams with, you know, with Golden State, you know, not knowing the situation with Steph and Klay going through his situation and Draymond just coming back. You know, Phoenix just been steady. They just had an injury with CP, but they just been steady. And they've been playing steady basketball without him, so it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be hard to get them out.
I mean, I'm still riding with Golden State, but I would love to see CP win a chip. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah.
Coming from Baltimore like you, talk about Gervonta Davis and what he means to boxing in Baltimore.
Well, you know, we call him Tank. You know, Tank Davis. Tank means everything to BMO. I mean, that's representation. You know, anybody that comes from BMO, man, we're going to rep the city the way where it's supposed to be represented, you know. And he's a blue collar. I mean, he's a kid that understands where he is and where he come from. And he lives his life in that way. You know, he's been very smart in terms of keeping himself out of the limelight and negative situations. He's all about his business. He's about his family, you know, his little girl. I'm just loving everything about Tank, and I'm just so proud that he's able to, you know, be able to make it through those situations growing up in the inner city of BMO. But because people, you know, we all have stories. Everybody have challenges, you know, but when you're able to, you know, overcome those adversities and see them guys, man, being able to reach the pinnacle of success, you know, it's self-rewarding for me.
Well, I'm a big Tank fan, and I've
seen this change with my own eyes. You know, we go to all his fights. And is after this one fight where he did.
You saw how he was early on, how flashy he was, you mm-hmm. know, and how he kind of now is true professional, true professional.
Yep, he's preparing, and a lot of stuff that he was doing off the court, I think he got away from and locked in to being a pro. And this definitely showed in all his performances up from that last performance, but three fights ago that he had where he didn't prepare. So I'm a big-time Take fan. Is there any other boxers that you like to watch? Or in any other fights that you want to see in 2022?
Well, fights, man, I'll tell you what. The fights that's out there, you got Spencer out there.
Ugas.
I mean, we got, who else we got out there? We got Guyap. We got Thurman coming back, right?
Yeah, but we got to see. We got to see Thurman. Thurman been up and down.
Yeah, and Canelo. You know, I need to see Canelo. I need to see Canelo fight somebody, man.
He needs to fight a real nigga. You know, that's what he needs to do.
I need to see him fight. You know, who we got? Man, I'm missing
Carlos.
One. I'm missing one. Not Charlos. I'm missing one, guys.
Bud Crawford.
Damn it. Crawford.
Yes,
there
sir.
There we go. Crawford.
Yes, sir.
That's him. That's who I was missing. Crawford. Yeah. But Canelo got to fight somebody. You know, he been dancing around ever since. The only person I believe he fought was Mayweather, and that was too early for him to be fighting Mayweather. When he fought him.
And he's still arguing with Triple G, and Triple G beat him. And now he's still arguing with Triple G, trying to fight Triple G again. He needs to move on to one of them Charlo boys and fight Benavidez. I think Benavidez will beat him.
And that's a possibility. I like to see it, though. I like to see that one. But that Triple G, yeah, you hit a good note there about Triple G. You know. But he I don't know who's out there for Tank, though. I'm trying to think. Who would be a good fight for Tank? That weight class. He's going to have to move up.
I'm happy he's fighting Rolly. I'm happy he's getting a chance to fight Rolly. Yeah. Rolly has some trouble. But Rolly talks a lot, and Rolly think he just the best thing in boxing since boxing started. But he's one of those guys that Tank needs to knock his face off.
Tank, he's going to shut him up real quick. Rolly, that, I don't even know why Rolly put him, but he want that, mm-hmm. He want that bag.
Yeah, he definitely want that bag. But since you're on our podcast, which we happy that you came on, let's talk about your podcast. How did you get into the space?
Oh, shit, just messing around with Oak Tree and Twirl. My boy Oak Tree, and just talking the game, man, and we, you know, especially when you get around Oak gonna bring all sorts of topics up and to where it's gonna go. It start off one way and it's gonna veer off another. You know, that's just the way my man operates, and I love him for it, man. But, you know, just talking the game, and I felt like, you know, we had something to offer based on where we came from and our journeys. And Earl got so many damn stories. You know, with him playing with the Dr. J's of the world and Isaiah and so forth. I mean, he's a storyteller. But, you know, Oak Tree got so much, too, to where I just need to just sit back and listen.
Thanks.
You know?
All right, we're coming down to the home stretch. Quick hitters. Sir. First thing to come to mind, let us know. You plus four, any players that have ever played in the NBA. Who are you bringing with you?
Oh, shit. Me plus four. Well, I'm going to just stay with my boys that, you know, I'm going to bring with me. I got Del Curry with me. I got Oak with me. I got LJ with me. And I got Zoe with me.
That's a mob. Stuck on the island. Which three shows or movies you watching?
Oh, Stuck on the Island. I'm watching Space Jam. I'm watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I'm watching, and I'm watching Eddie.
That's a good basketball movie too.
All
the movies that I was in, all the scenes that I was in.
You were known as obviously one of the toughest defenders. Your top three toughest matchups you felt like?
Magic was one, Penny, and GP.
I just watched Hardwood Classic last night. It was 93 Phoenix versus Seattle in the playoffs. Charles Barkley's MVP year versus Sean Kemp and GP. That shit was a battle, boy. Game was so different back then, though. I literally sat and watched the whole entire game and just saw, like you said, back to the basket, the tight curls, the guiding the hand, how GP would try to, and they started double teaming Kevin Johnson because he was too fast. That shit was dope.
People KJ forgot about KJ. Well, KJ was special, boy. KJ was special.
Five dinner guests, dead or alive.
Five dinner guests. Oh, Michael Jackson's one. I got Martin Luther King is two.
Mm-hmm.
I got Mandela is three. Yeah. And then, of course, I would love to have the opportunity to sit down with Marvin Gaye. You know? And for me, I did have an opportunity to sit down with her, but I would love to have her back at my dinner table with my Aunt Miss Maya Angelou. Okay.
Very nice.
Nice.
Favorite artist from the 80s or 90s? Like, who did you used to listen to preparing for games?
Oh, man, you know, back then, that's when hip-hop was just getting the beginning. You know what I mean? But, I got to go with my man Tribe Called Quest because I was in his song, you know? Q-Tip, I got to get Tip some little love.
What guest would you like to see on our show? But before you answer this question, you have to help us get your answer on our show.
What guest I'd like to see you guys have on the show? And let me see, what guest? Who will be somebody that's really...
You said a name who I'm dying to get on the show because I'm a Texas boy.
Oh, you talking about LJ?
LJ, yes.
Grandma Ma.
That would be a hell of a show.
Yeah, y'all man, we need
him?
LJ.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Yes.
All right, I'll work on it.
Well, man, that's a wrap. Muggsy, we appreciate your time and everything you've done for this game, the inspiration you've been, and continuing to take care of your community. We appreciate you, man, and thank you for your time today.
I appreciate you guys, man. I've been a big fan of both of you guys for quite some time. I just really appreciate the platform that you guys creating now, but more so what you guys did for your careers, for your families, and so forth, man. Keep spreading that love and keep doing that positive work
appreciate
out there.
Appreciate that. Fellas. Well, that's a wrap. Muggsy Bogues,
we appreciate
you can catch us
the
on
time,
Showtime
OG.
Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform, Black Effects. We'll see y'all next week.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here.
With the first pick in the NFL Draft.
Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Brought to you by Visa. Visa. Everywhere you want to be.